So thanks, Mark, for the invitation. And looking around the room, I'm glad to see some of the faces that I see, because a lot of this, quite frankly, is musings from Matt with some support from the literature. But I'd like there to be some open and frank discussion, because I'll readily admit there may be some viewpoints and some justifications that perhaps I've simply overlooked. But Dan Mosier, close to the front row. So in preparing for this talk, I thought it might be helpful to look back, and it happened to be pretty much 10 years on the dot, Dan, where a subcommittee that I think you represented during a BIF talk essentially came up with the following recommendation, and that's: whenever possible, carcass data from harvested fed cattle and ultrasonic measurements from yearling, basically breeding animals, should be jointly analyzed with multiple trait models. By and large, that's what's done now across the majority of beef breeds. If you look, we were just talking about a crossbreed EPD adjustment factors here a few minutes ago in a different committee. You'll notice some gaps for some of the breeds, and that's actually some of the American breeds, and that's because they've not yet taken this step, still report EPDs on an ultrasound basis. And then as this quote goes on, says such an evaluation would provide genetic predictions for both carcass and ultrasound measurements, but since the carcass measurements are the ERT, or economically relevant traits, the carcass predictions and their associated accuracy should those be those ones that are published and used. And furthermore, that both of those should be evaluated on an age constant basis. So that's kind of been the standing BIF opinion for the past decade, but as Mark alluded to, relatively recently I and perhaps others have received some questions really centered on why is it age adjusted, with the general thought that that's not the way we feed cattle and the way we market cattle. It's on some other kind of endpoint other than age. So I guess to be up front, my thesis is that I'm sympathetic and maybe even empathetic to the fact that age-adjusted carcass traits are not the ERT, that indeed when we market fed cattle, it's on some other endpoints. And I might argue that that endpoint varies depending on the year and the market signal, whether it's fat or whether it's weight, but it really isn't age necessarily. However, I would contend that age-adjusted carcass measurements represent a pragmatic means of comparing animals for genetic merit as parents, given the way data are collected and reported. So that's the vantage point that I'm coming from as we go through this. And again, hopefully we can have some good discussion. So as we think about collection of carcass data, data aren't collected at a constant endpoint. And I'm trying my best, Mark, to use adjusted and not constant here, because really we're talking about adjusting to various points and not collecting at a constant point. For those that think, man, what we really need is for carcass data to be collected at 4/10 or 6/10 or whatever the magic number is of 12th rib fat, think about how problematic that is. So I go into a big pen of cattle, and I start picking out and harvesting animals as they reach 4/10 of an inch of fat. What does that do to a contemporary group? Right, just blows it up. Right, there is no contemporary group anymore. So we're really not talking about collecting at a constant endpoint. So regardless of the desired endpoint, whether it's age, whether it's weight, whether it's marbling, whether it's fat, there is a distribution around that. So there is variation when we actually go ahead and, if you will, pull the trigger and harvest cattle and then collect that data that goes into NCE. So again, an example, if you think about a pen of fed cattle, when they're quote-unquote ready, whatever that verbiage means, whenever they're ready, there's variation around whatever parameter that we consider them to be ready at. So if it's fat, there's variation around fat, and there can be substantial variation around that. So harvesting cattle based on some average of pen readiness, and again, if we think about external fat as a proxy for body composition, harvesting them when the pen reaches an average does absolutely nothing at all to get away from it being an, at the end of the day, age-adjusted genetic merit estimate that we produce, okay? We just happened to go ahead and harvest the cattle when the average of a pen reached a certain body composition, and in no way does that place inherently the carcass EPD on any different base than age-adjusted. So let's assume an example here, a pen of 99 fed cattle. So I started out the example, Jerry, with 100 animals, and I realized that 100 wasn't exactly divisible by 3, so it became 99 fed cattle instead. But they have known source, known age, and known sire. So if you think about a quote-unquote structured progeny testing system where maybe the entity, the breed association, does not own the cattle. There's some partnering with a cattle feeder, a cow-calf producer that actually owns the animals. There's a bit of a conflict of interest there in the sense the person that owns the cattle really doesn't want to take the risk of having gotten them too big, too fat, etc. And so you find yourselves then in a position where there's really these large group of animals that all of a sudden are slaughtered maybe at 3 different time points. So maybe the first 33 of the first third of the animals die, and then some period later the second third, and then at the end the remainder of them. So the question is, how likely is it that in each of those kill groups the average fat thickness was the same? Donald, you're saying probably not. Probably the early cattle were fat ones, went early, and that last kill group's probably quite a bit leaner. Right? So you just decided that enough's enough, we're killing the last group. And the first group, you said we got to get rid of them before we get a lot of discounts for Y4s and 5s, right? So that's a very pragmatic way of having slaughtered those animals. But what you did was you started with a contemporary group of 99, and then at the end, what have you done? You've further parsed them. So the other question is, so we agree that the answer to the first question's no. The second question then, let's think there's multiple sires represented in that first group of 99. So are all sires equally represented in the first kill group? Right? So that's the other problem, isn't it? So when we started separating this large group of cattle into different groups based on kill group, now all of a sudden we don't have maybe the same degree of sire comparison we originally had. Now, what about if we assume that these are not only multiple sires, but maybe multiple sire breeds represented in this big group? So then the first group of cattle that went to die, do you think we've got pretty equal representation of sire breed across those? Probably not. Some of you may be thinking, well, it depends on which ones. And by no means am I going to stand up here and start telling you which sire breeds had the cattle that died first and the ones that died last, okay? I'm not quite that ignorant or arrogant, either one. But the fact is, you see, as we begin to chop those up, our ideal contemporary group begins to change. And so it begs the question then, really, what is the definition of the contemporary group in that scenario? So large cohort groups are desirable. And the scenario that I just got done describing undoubtedly has happened in carcass data that's entered into NCE, and that becomes somewhat problematic. Cherry picking based on market readiness is problematic at best, and how problematic it is depends on how much cherry picking occurs. There's the scenario I just described, and then you can envision really a horrific scenario when JR goes in and ultrasounds every animal and tells me which one's hit 0.4 inch of fat, and we harvest that one that day. Right? That's akin to saying I'm going to wean every calf at 205 days of age and then wonder why Bruce threw all my data out because I don't have a contemporary group anymore. Okay? So the degree of cherry picking determines the degree to which the data become less valuable. In the example in the previous slide, the original pen grouping needs to be the fixed kind of contemporary group effect. So that whole 99 head is really a contemporary group. And then what you have is within that, you've got slaughter date, so taking into account those animals that left the original contemporary group earlier. Some may argue, probably the some that are going to argue are either in the back rows or standing along the edges of the walls on how you actually account for that. But the reality is you have to account for the original group and the fact that some animals left the group earlier than others. So given the type of structure of carcass data collection, breed differences from carcass traits from field data, I would argue, is at a minimum problematic as well, given that sense that certain kill groups are going to be dominated by certain sire breeds, and there's not going to be mixture. So adjusting carcass data. I said we don't collect it at a constant endpoint, we adjust. So carcass data can be adjusted to a common endpoint. Think about any endpoint you want. Common age, common fat, common weight, common marbling score. There may be others that I'm not thinking of, but those seem like the reasonable ones to at least consider. Whatever you adjust to has to be practical. So I always get worried when I point out particular breeds because there's going to be a breeder of that breed in the room that's going to get upset. But just to use an extreme example, a full-blood Piedmontese animal, if we adjust that population to six-tenths of an inch of fat, how practical is that, right? We're way outside the parameter space of what those cattle are going to be. So it has to be a practical endpoint. In the case of age adjustments, age windows, as defined by breed organizations, help us protect against nonlinear changes of growth or tissue deposition related to age because it's in a relatively narrow window. The problem becomes as that window widens, that assumption of linearity may not hold true. And so we're making some relatively big assumptions if we assume simply fitting a linear covariate to adjust to a desired endpoint is going to be appropriate. So think of that again if you think about a pen of fat cattle. The variation within a pen, as that increases, that assumption of linearity may not be appropriate. So the other problem is if you think about adjusting and you think about the talk that's coming up and the talk that Bruce and Larry and I participated on the other side about, what if all 18 breeds that you guys work with at US Mark decided they had 18 different carcass endpoints that they want to adjust to? That probably is your worst case scenario or worst dream, Larry, trying to deal with that. So what enables this kind of a cross-breed EPD adjustment factors is conformity of breed, of trait definitions. And so as we begin adjusting to different endpoints and as those become more dramatic, that conformity begins to erode and that becomes problematic. So this question isn't new, I think, as Mark alluded to in the introduction. And so I did a little bit of reading last night while you guys were probably solving the world's problems in a speakeasy. I was actually reading scientific literature that I hadn't read in a while. And so this question was addressed. Actually, I thought it was at a BIF meeting in the early 2000s, one of the first ones I ever attended. But actually, I think the question was posed originally by Jerry Lipsey when he was in charge of the American Simmental Association. And Janice Rump, that some of you might remember, actually was the one that led that talk in this publication. And as you read the publication, here's what the take-home messages are. So they actually used Simmental-sired calves, and they looked at adjusting different carcass traits, be it ribeye area, 12th rib fat thickness, marbling, carcass weight, and actually percent retail cuts to an age constant, to a fat constant, to a marbling constant, and to a weight constant. So obviously they didn't adjust 12th rib fat to a 12th rib fat constant. So those ones are not included in this. But they looked at the other endpoints. And so here's what the take home is. So if you look at the rank correlation of sire EPDs, whether they were adjusted to an age endpoint or one of these other endpoints I have up here, fat, marbling, or carcass weight, those rank correlations range between 0.9 and 0.99. So exceptionally high. So no matter what I adjust them to, at least in this data, the ranking of sires is not going to dramatically change. And so the lowest rank correlation, I think, was for ribeye area, adjusted to a carcass weight endpoint. And so given the relationship of those two, you might argue actually fundamentally changed the trait definition for ribeye area. So it actually became different. In this paper, the only substantial re-ranking they saw is when they adjusted percentage of retail cuts to a fat constant, which becomes a trait that I don't fully understand, to be real honest. So that's the only time they saw any kind of substantial re-ranking. So what about breed differences? So knowledges about breed differences for carcass traits obviously can inform breeding decisions at the commercial level and enable the production of EPD that are comparable across breeds. So if we assume a fat or marbling endpoint, one question to ask is the same endpoint reasonable for all breeds? So there may be some traditional continental breeds that excel in lean growth, and if you try to adjust them to an endpoint that's really high percent choice, that maybe doesn't make as much sense as doing the same thing as it would in a traditional British breed. So commonality, again, becomes a question. The other question is the slope or the rate of change of tissue deposition the same across breeds? I don't reasonably know the answer to that, but I feel fairly firm to say, no, it's not. Okay? So if you think then about those linear adjustments, if we want to adjust to a fat endpoint, that's really a different adjustment as you go across breeds. And then again, the nonlinearity component, depending on how wide the range is certainly different across breeds as well. So a possible approach might be an index-based approach whereby we consider the goal traits actually EPDs that are put on some other kind of endpoint other than age-adjusted, and then you can think of the index traits as being age-adjusted EPD. So if you think about, and I'll show you in a minute, if you think about the genetic variance covariance matrix between what are the goal traits, the things you wish to change, and what are the index, really then those become the genetic covariances between, an example, a fat or marbling-adjusted carcass trait and an age-adjusted carcass trait. The problem with that is it really requires the estimates of those genetic relationships, those genetic correlations, and at least to my knowledge, I'm not aware particularly of any recent values that would give us any insight into that. There's also the potential that those genetic relationships maybe differ between breeds, and so as a consequence, it may not be as straightforward as we'd like it to be. So just to remind you guys, what I'm talking about here is, and because this slide has animation, you know that I didn't put it together. I actually stole that animation bit from a graduate student. But what I have represented here really is the G1-2 matrix. This would really be the matrix, transition matrix I'm talking about that would account for those genetic relationships between EPDs, carcass EPDs adjusted to an age constant, and then what may be considered the ERT or goal traits adjusted to some other constant. In conversation with Larry last night, and admittedly I hadn't really considered this going into that, and in an index approach, I readily saw how this transition matrix would change, but this V value is really a vector of economic weights. So for every one unit change in a goal trait, what is the economic value holding all other goal traits constant? That's what those are. As you begin to change the trait definition and perhaps adjust them to a different endpoint, that likely changes what those economic values are as well. So it's really in an index approach a change to those two components. I think a logical first step, though, would be to ask the question, what is the sensitivity? So if the genetic correlation between an age constant EPD and, let's say, a fat constant EPD is 1, then it's a moot question. As it begins to differ from 1, we can actually ask the question, how sensitive would an index be to those changes in the genetic correlation? So that's a sensitivity analysis here. So essentially, you can test for the sensitivity in what we might consider errors or differences in the assumption of those genetic parameters. We could also do it for that vector of economic values. So what we would actually be looking at is what I call the efficiency here, which is really the ratio of the response we would get if we had some kind of used genetic parameters versus the response we get if we knew those genetic parameters with complete certainty. So we could look and say we assume the genetic correlation to be 0.8. what if it's really 0.6? What if it's really 0.4? And actually look and determine what is the efficiency then or the sensitivity in that index. And the answer could be until we get to 0.7 or 0.6, or I don't know what the magic number is, we really don't see a big change in the robustness of our index. So we could begin to perturb it in that manner. So in terms of action points, to me, if we're actually going to take a stab at looking at body composition changes, and further, if we want to know if there are differences in rate of tissue deposition across breeds, and if there truly is a reasonable non-linearity effect, the only way I know how to do that is to use serial data. And so a way to start is to potentially mine existing serial slaughter data that may exist at U.S. Mark. My understanding of that is not only is it somewhat limited, but also perhaps more historic in nature, and so perhaps current breed differences may be not realistically depicted there. And there may be other sources of serial slaughter data, too, that would be worth mining. And so one could then estimate those slopes or rates of change by breed, or perhaps it would be fine just to do it by biological type, and then estimate those genetic correlations that I was talking about between age-adjusted and some kind of body composition-adjusted EPD. What this really dictates, if this is truly a pervasive concern in the industry, is a renewed effort for serial slaughter kinds of collection data, so structured serial slaughter collection data. I've never done that, but I hear tell it's expensive to do. And so what may be more practical is actually serial ultrasound data. The only slight, concern I might have with that is then you get into a bit of an A to B to C kind of a relationship, because what you really want is to know the rate of change for the carcass trait. We know the rate of change for ultrasound, and so we have to be able to relate those two. So to kind of summarize, the current question regarding appropriate adjustments and not really collection schemes to try to collect at a constant endpoint. So I think the harder people attempt to get carcass data at a common endpoint, the more they really mess up the structure of the data they're collecting. So I think we have to be a bit cautious with that. I think still age adjustments are probably the most pragmatic way to conduct national cattle evaluation, and to argue to the contrary would be to suggest that, one, doing it the way we do it now versus an alternative means we would take different decisions. We would actually be selecting different sires. And I guess based on the literature, I'm not confident that that would actually occur. However, if carcass data endpoints is a concern, then the first step really is to quantify that genetic relationship between traits, moving towards an index-based approach that I discussed before. So it's my belief that if that were to move forward, serial data collection, carcass, or the ultrasound proxy needs to occur. Even if this isn't a concern that needs to be tackled, I might still contend that it would be good SOP to actually understand body composition changes that differ amongst our breeds. It seems like a lot of emphasis has been put on maybe how marbling differs. Body composition changes, I think, would be important to look at as well. So again, to reiterate, at the end of the day, the question is, are we ranking animals correctly and generating response at the commercial level that we might anticipate? So with that, I know we've got plenty of time for questions. I know there's cattle feeders in here and then also a couple of people that have maybe more of a historic vantage point on this than certainly I do. So I'd welcome comments or questions at this time, Mark.
Hey, Matt, I got a bit confused about adjusting and accounting for selection. Clearly, those records that are harvested are going to generate bias in any evaluation.
Because they're selected.
They're not done at random.
Yeah.
And are you saying that the adjustment will account for
Sorry. If I insinuated that in any way, I certainly didn't mean to. So that's a different issue. The fact that animals that could be going to harvest. So here's the example, right? At weaning, you take a decision to castrate a bull calf that up until that point was a candidate for selection, perhaps because his pre-weaning growth wasn't good, his birth weight was too big, you decide to castrate him, and then that becomes the group of cattle you collect carcass data on. I think that's kind of the scenario that you're talking about then. They've been selected already. So I didn't address that. To do that, then, there has to be, if I may, an anchor trait, right, that was recorded earlier that could take into account then that sequential culling that actually occurred.
But even your 90 animals killed when the first ones were fat and the last ones weren't, that data is useless as an evaluation.
I'm not arguing that. I think that what I meant to suggest is those questions I posed, so you have a vastly different mean across those three because you made that mean different. You have likely confounding of sire and contemporary group. You've got confounding of breed and contemporary group. And not only were the animals pre-selected, having gone on to feed perhaps, but then they're pre-selected going into those three kill groups. So I'm not advocate. I hope the take-home message wasn't, Matt said that the way you should construct carcass data collection is take a big group of animals and chop them up into three groups that has all that confounding. That's not what I'm suggesting. But the reality is, though, and I'd love to hear from the breed associations, I think that kind of data flows in. And maybe I'm incorrect, but I think that kind of data flows in. And how those animals then, one, are used, and how the contemporary group definition is actually formed is a reasonable question. And if that data is used, there is absolutely no doubt, assuming there's not complete confounding of a lot of those things I mentioned, you have to take into account that slaughter date in the original pen group.